And we do have a guest tonight, Eddie Baracco. He's the guy we had an interview with years and years and years ago. I want to say probably 10 years ago or more. Back when we very first started.
Even before my time?
Probably before your time and before even the website's time. It might go back to MySpace days. That's how long ago it was. It's like, yeah, and he's been out in Vegas working with some UFC fighters and working at a good gym out there. But the last time I talked to him, all I can remember is he was talking about bringing in some baby pit bulls. So we'll have to see if those things are still alive. but among other things, and just catch up with what's been going on. But, you had had some pit bull babies, puppies that you had just taken in. That's how long ago. I don't know if you still have those, but... What? Breaking up a little. Huh?
Yeah.
Say that again? And tell us a little bit about what you're doing out there in the desert, I guess.
Now just split my time up between Robert Drysdale's gym, Extreme Couture, and Vendelay Silva's, you know, just depending on who I'm training that day and what the regimen is. Of course, this UFC headquarters, this Performance Institute, it's been awesome for the guys that I train in the UFC, quite a facility. And yeah, so I retired from fighting back in early 2010, coaching, teaching full time, and been able to have fun with that, make a decent career out of it. It's been awesome.
Cool. And what's some of the names that you're working with out there?
Some of the guys that come out and see me, and then also that I work with. Joseph Benavidez, Tim Elliott, James Krause, those guys from Kansas, Zach Cummings, when they come in town, and then a lot of the guys from Alpha Male, you know, Cody Garbrandt's in town.
Oh, cool.
Do some mitt work with him and different guys. There's some guys in Extreme Couture and Drysdale's been working with Kyle Reyes and Pete Martin, Mike Aaron, and so yeah, it's been good.
Awesome. Yeah, Vegas, I mean, it's the place to be, I guess, now, especially with, I have heard a lot of good things about the Performance Institute, but the one complaint I've heard is, you know, you got to live in Vegas. If you don't live in Vegas, you can't really take advantage of it as much as some of the fighters do. And I even saw that they're starting
to... If you're not in Vegas, you can't take advantage.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're coming in for a fight. But there was actually even one girl came in there to get her rib patched up on the last episode of The Ultimate Fighter. So, I mean, they're even using it for the younger crowd coming in. So, it's obviously pretty important to them.
Yeah, Joseph Benavidez and I, we had that fight scheduled in New Zealand, and he ended up blowing his knee out pretty good and got surgery, and he's been doing his physical therapy there and made quite a recovery. So, the place has been good to the athletes for many different reasons, and it's nice to see them have that available to them. Mm-hmm. They definitely deserve it.
Yeah, it's I lived out there for a couple years actually, and I kind of had to stay incognito because, you know, everybody told me the one question they asked were, you know, aren't they afraid they're gonna whack you, the Fertitas, you know, because I was going after them in court. And trying to stay on the lowdown, you know, because they weren't connected to the mob still anyway. I really wasn't worried about it, but I still didn't want them to let them know where I lived, you know. Because they had all kinds of private investigators trying to come after me and everything, but I still managed over the years to interview a lot of UFC fighters. And actually, you mentioned James Krause. We interviewed him just before he went on The Ultimate Fighter a couple years ago. And he had some interesting things to say about how the UFC situation is developing with fighters, and you know, how you really can't complain. I mean, you know what they expect, and you just basically have to deliver what they expect if you want to advance your career. And one of the things I always say is, you know, Conor McGregor is a perfect example of it. You know, sometimes you just have to have the, it's almost like their criteria for picking the Ultimate Fighter used to be, you have to have more personality than fighting skills sometimes with some of these guys. But he surprised me. Surprised a lot of people with his ability to go over to boxing, and I thought that was going to be a bigger deal than it was. And I was actually surprised that Dana White didn't try to put any other mixed martial artists against any boxers. Did you find that kind of weird too? On that card, he didn't put any other of his fighters on there, just one of Conor?
No, not really. I mean, at the end of the day, it's two separate sports. And although you need boxing in mixed martial arts, having both competed in both sports, and I can tell you that strikers are on a different level as far as what they do. A mixed martial artist, they have so much that they have to train in and worry about in their fights. Like to specialize in boxing like a boxer does is, you know, is a pretty difficult feat to undertake as far as competing at that level.
Right.
You know, I think Mayweather did exactly what he set out to do. You know, kind of get a few more for a couple rounds, get him tired for a couple rounds, and then he felt like he was, you know, where he wanted him, kind of just turned up.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he was setting up for this.
One of the things that I just went there, I think McGregor's instincts may have hurt up a little bit, because when one time there were times in there that he caught himself thinking, and I think that hurt him in the long run.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Now, I know you're in Vegas. Did you bet on that fight?
You got to think. I can't see the hammer fist here.
Did you bet on that fight, Eddie, being in Vegas?
No.
No. Yeah, you would have to bet big.
The odds initially made you want to throw some money on McGregor.
But, yeah, that was a long shot.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it was, you know, boxing is boxing and mixed martial arts is mixed martial arts. And not to say that people in mixed martial arts can't compete in boxing. To go against somebody in the top 10 in their division, let alone the best in their division, despite Mayweather being, you know, retired and older in his career, I don't see anybody, you know, being able to compete at that level.
Yeah, I mean, you had to kind of look at it going in as a win-win situation, even if McGregor lost, because, I mean, already it's the biggest walk-on fight
100%.
In boxing history. You know, this guy comes off the streets, even though he has some fighting experience, he's basically coming in brand new to boxing, and he gets to face a guy who's undefeated with 49 wins.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Like, who would have ever thought that was possible? But, he won either way. Yeah. I thought he would have had to really get to the decision, but, you know, he didn't even have to get that far.
One fight.
Yeah, tripled his income. That's net worth.
A fraction of that money.
Yeah.
For a fraction of that. Any weight class, anybody.
Yeah, I'll fight somebody right now for $50,000. Unbelievable, $100 million, you know. But I felt like he would have done a lot better if he had put a full year into boxing training. I think that was part of the Mayweather negotiations, was to make it quick, because he did not want to give him more time to adjust. But I don't know if it would have affected it or not. He had the best strategy you could have.
All right, but. You know, these guys have been boxing since they were young, and that's why they make it look easy. That's why they're so good at what they do.
But as far as mixed martial arts, I mean, we've seen a lot of styles come and go. We've seen karate be good sometimes, and then it faded away with the Wonder Boy kind of not being able to get the wins over, what's the guy's name I'm thinking of? Woodley.
Woodley!
Yeah. And this just
yeah,
been...
Yeah, Woodley. Lyoto Machida, he was another good karate-based guy.
I think it's been so much more centered on striking on the feet just because fans seem to like it more, number one, and, you know, the bonus-based system in the UFC and just, you know, your ability to sell fights often depends on your ability to knock people out. So I think over the years since we've been doing this, it's just gone to such a striking-heavy game, but and anything can still end it. But... you know, it seems like if you can have a good takedown defense and you can keep it on the feet, you can have just, you can take your career wherever you want to go. But I've seen some people,
yeah,
they come
I mean,
in
it's
there.
Definitely more exciting, you know, from a fan perspective.
Yeah.
And it sells fights, obviously, to see the big knockouts. You know, I think at the end of the day, the same martial arts are still the foundation of what works. You know, things like wrestling, boxing, Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, you know, those foundation martial arts, I think at the end of the day, they're always going to be the ones that are fundamentally sound in a fight, you know.
Now, as far as your career, both in the cage, outside the cage, you know, coming up in the sports, what's been your best moment so far?
Probably have to say being in Thailand, training in Thailand, you know, getting to compete out there. I mean, as far as that goes, that's the pinnacle. Those guys are just amazing at their level of conditioning and the toughness of their bodies and mind. It was always a privilege to be out there.
All right, awesome. Another former guest of ours doesn't have the same account. This made me think of Riddick Bowe trying to do the Muay Thai fight out there, and he went in there and got his legs kicked to death.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't want to do it when you're 50.
Like that is tough. Yeah. You know,
it's such an important part of mixed martial arts too. I mean, every time I think of Muay Thai and Thailand and everything, how they, it's just always those knees, those sharp upward knees, especially to the chest. I mean, you don't even have to hit the guy in the head, but that's the object usually, is to pull the head down and knee him in the head. But even those rib shots, it just can do so much damage if you get that angle down. And those guys, girls too over there, are just so good at it. That's just the main theme of it. A lot of people end up falling in love with
yeah.
the place. There was actually one mixed martial arts female that lived out there. It was on The Ultimate Fighter. Couple of years, Jessica Magana or something like that. Angela Magana, I don't know what her name is, but anyway. She's actually not very popular after some of the things she did. I think she got punched by Cyborg at the convention there. Anyway.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's fun stuff.
Yeah.
I actually got to coach two seasons up in The Ultimate Fighter. One with Joseph Benavidez's team and one with Cody Garbrandt's team.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most rewarding but challenging things I've ever done as a coach. You know, in 6 weeks, taking guys in you've never worked with before and having 13 guys fight in a six-week period. With Benavidez's season, by the third round, we were coaching and cornering our guys who were fighting each other, you know. So
yeah,
it was an amazing experience, and I'm super grateful that I got to be a part of those guys' journey and a part of that, and definitely the coolest thing I've done as a coach.
Yeah, it's amazing that they allow those fights to be exhibitions. I wish they were just you know, at least counted as fights. They do get some pay sometimes. I mean, when they get the submissions or whatever.
Yeah, you get some finish bonuses. They make a little bit per fight.
Right.
They make a set amount per fight.
But yeah, I've always liked the show itself. Some of the casting decisions sometimes weren't the wisest, but yeah, they've had some interesting episodes, and it's really made the organization what it is in a lot of ways, because you know, some of the best fighters the organization has came up through there. And you know, it's interesting, they talked about when the corporate took over they were going to get rid of it, but they obviously haven't pulled the trigger on that, and I don't think they should. Just brings in so many different perspectives and people from all around the world, and I think one of the biggest strengths is it just gives you an idea of who they are. Like, actually, probably for the first time in a long time, I watched the episode last week, and I was actually rooting for a girl because of her story more than because of what kind of fighter she was.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw that for the first time the first season I coached for Benavidez's team, and they actually had those, you know, backstories with the guy. And, you know, even my mom, she got into the script, though, because of that, because she felt a, you know, personal connection with the guy, and then you're rooting for him, and, you know, so it's a cool thing to actually get to show, you know, where these guys come from. You know, that was a season that Tim Elliott won, and we ended up being great friends, and he comes out to his camps, and we get to work, and, you know, it's a very cool thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then sometimes you have guys that come through and they just you think they're going to be the best fighters ever, and they just fade away. It's weird. It's like sometimes the stars come through there, and then sometimes the guys you think they're going to be the stars just, like one of the examples, one of the guys I got to interview from the live season, I believe it was Luke Barnett, or no, it wasn't the live season, it was the one after that. But yeah, he was a guy who literally quit the business world to live in a gym. And real tall guy from the UK, and just he wasn't able to turn it around when he got to the UFC. He wasn't able to translate it to, you know, continuous wins. I don't even actually know if he's still fighting, but if he is, it's still over in the UK. He was great. I thought for sure he was going to win the whole thing, and that was the one that Kelvin Gastelum won. Never saw him coming. He was the youngest guy in history to win that one.
Right. Right.
Now, what is your favorite move? Do you have a favorite submission or a favorite strike that you either did a lot in your career or teach a lot of fighters, and it's your special move?
I think some of the things that helped me the best as far as being able to win fights in my career was a solid boxing game in Muay Thai, the angles, the footwork, having good boxing fundamentals, good jab, good head movement, and then you combine that with the kicks and the knees and elbows, you know. That was one of the things that helped me a lot.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed over the years is...
Don't have a favorite submission, though.
Okay. I was going to say, one of the things I noticed is you don't see a lot of the short elbows, especially, I think, when you've got control of the other guy's wrist against the cage and you're trying to grapple. I mean, right there should be so many short elbows thrown to the face that the guys never think to throw.
Yeah.
And I've seen even guys, there was a UFC fight years ago, well, the guy on the bottom opened up the kid on the top with these crazy elbows. And when I started actually training to do an amateur mixed martial arts fight after doing nothing but boxing my whole career, just at the amateur level there too, I just wanted to throw elbows like crazy on the bag. And I thought that the boxing style lends well to elbows because, you know, you get that hand-eye coordination from trying to, you know, land punches to one location, usually the head. Obviously, you got to throw it to the body too, but, you know, the quickness of the boxing punch, if you can translate that to elbows, I think somebody who had that style could do a lot of damage in MMA these days. But it just seems like people don't use
it. Yeah, the key is what lacks the most, and the reason you don't see it in the fights, strictly because guys aren't training. If you're not training it in the gym, if you don't have elbow pads on and you're not doing it when you're sparring and you're drilling, you're not going to do it in a fight. You know, so I think ultimately people blame the training for that. If, you know, but how, I at some of the top gyms in the world, and I don't see guys with elbow pads on working elbows and sparring. So it's just something that's not going to come natural once the fight happens, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Getting bad thing about fighting, all you have to do is drill something, and then...
Yeah, and that's another point, too, because, I mean, talk about The Ultimate Fighter. When you're watching episodes of that, I mean, even when they're working with the dummies, they're not really elbowing it that hard, you know. But when they're doing drills, yeah, they never follow through.
Yeah, that's a crazy show.
It's nuts.
Yeah, that's a crazy show. You know, we get those guys and we got 1 week before the fight start.
Yeah,
so we literally cast the show, we pick the teams, and we have 1 week with everybody, and the fights start, and then they have them every week.
Yeah, one of the insights that we got from one guy, actually from up here in New Hampshire where I'm living now, Chuck O'Neill, was on one of the episodes, one of the seasons, and we interviewed him years later. And he talked about the weight cuts was the difficult thing, because usually you got months in advance of a fight to prepare and do your weight cut on your own schedule. And now all of a sudden you got 6 weeks of weight cuts. You know, and you don't know when you're fighting, so you don't know what day you're going to have to start your weight cut half the time. And a lot of people got on that guy, Gabe Rudiger, because he couldn't shed a pound, you know. But you got to consider, you know, you just got dropped a big surprise on you. You know, you got to cut weight every other week to win the tournament. So many different things.
Absolutely.
That's why I was kind of against the live season. I thought the live season was a bad idea.
Doesn't know.
Especially when they tried to take the guys, it was like 2 weeks between their last fight in the house live and then right to the cage, and they still had bruises on their faces from their last fights. And they're going at it 2 weeks later.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was not surprised they never did that again. You know, yeah, it's a cool idea to do the live season, but make it 3 months later that you do the actual fight, not 2 weeks. That was nuts. Anyway, getting back to what you're doing out there, what's your favorite thing to do in training? What do you think is, and what do you think is the most important thing that you can have a guy do to prepare for a fight?
I think the most important thing to do, as far as me training, and my philosophies, are to simulate a fight as close as we can. You know, so pad work, food, fit-ins, downs. It should include ground and pound work. It should include grapple work. You can't separate everything, because once the MMA fight, you have to put it and be drawing blank. A lot of guys are still, you know, they go do their striking work or their pad work, mitt work, and it doesn't involve any transitions to takedowns. They're not finishing it, and they're not working ground, and not back up. It has to model that fight as close as you can. And then obviously, you have specific combos that you're working, or if you have a specific opponent, working specific things for them. Speaking. You know, the work needs to include everything.
Right.
Because that's what the fight has to be like.
And do you have a favorite fighter, either that you work with directly or that you have to watch every time they fight in a pro card?
You know, over the years, I think favorite fighters that I've got to work with and train and be a part of their camps. Guys like Justin Benavidez, Cody Gardner, James Krause, Tim Elliott, Kyle Reyes. These guys, crazy work ethic, good people, humble, generous to everybody around them. You know, they go in there and they give it their all literally every time. And I'm here to get to work with guys like that.
And how about somebody that you have to
watch? I'm really excited for the fight in November between Cody and TJ.
Oh, yeah. That should be a real barn burner, especially with the way they reacted to each other on the show. Jeez. And the history between the alpha male and that whole thing. And,
yeah, those guys out there in Sacramento, like, they're my... I'm always partial to those guys, but that's going to be fun no matter whose side you're on. It's going to be a good stuff to watch.
Yeah.
My buddies out there, Danny Castillo and Lance Palmer and Uriah and those guys, good people, real good people out there.
Yeah, I thought that thing was so overblown. I mean, who told who?
They made it into something for the TV.
Yeah. But, you know, at least TJ had a sense of humor and could laugh off the grabbing him like a snake remarks and stuff like that. And he didn't get baited by any of the stuff that Cody tried to do, because Cody really wanted to get him to fight him before the contracted fight. I'd never seen anybody try to.
Yeah, no, Cody definitely has no problem with that.
Yeah.
Cody will definitely, he'll definitely go to town with you.
He's not afraid of anybody, I don't think, that kid.
There's no pretending there on either side.
Unbelievable. And what do you love most about mixed martial arts? We always have to ask everybody that.
I'm just grateful for what it's done in my life, both career-wise and personally. You know, how it enabled me to evolve and develop as a man and a human being. People it's allowed me to connect with, and lives that I've got to be a part of and share experiences with. You know, there's just something about, you know, brothers in arms, so to speak, that the bonds, you know, you make and friendships you develop. It's a special thing, you know, and to be able to improve yourself physically, mentally, spiritually, and help others do the same. I mean, for me personally, I wouldn't want to do anything else. So I felt blessed in that department.
Awesome. And what's your ultimate goal with all of it, with the training now that you've gotten into working with these guys? What would you like to see happen with that?
Obviously, as a coach, you want to see everybody achieve their goal. So, most of them to be a world champion, to be able to live comfortably and take care of the people around financially and not stress about them stuff, to be healthy. So that's what I want for life. I think any process I could also take care of myself. A fair trip. It would be nice down the road to open a gym somewhere outside of Las Vegas. And
just a little too crowded.
You know, somewhere where I can enjoy the scenery.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the best...
My whole life, some cool things you could do here, but I'd like to have some green and some trees. And that'd be nice to be in a place that, you know, I could still do what I love doing. Maybe not as oversaturated with gyms,
yeah.
And still, can impart some knowledge of the sport.
There's a ton of everything out in Vegas, I noticed when I lived there. There's every restaurant you can think of, all kinds of casinos, about 17 supermarkets, tons of different neighborhoods.
Something on every corner.
Yeah. You got a mountain. You can ski out there. I mean, I couldn't believe that when I heard that. It was kind of weird to me to go there in February and see leaves coming off the trees when with a little few trees that they actually have when it's like 40 degrees at night, you know? It's like at the lowest.
Yeah.
Like weird.
Yep.
The one thing I really, really liked about Vegas, coming from New England, is there was no mosquitoes.
Yeah, definitely no mosquitoes.
That was good.
Definitely don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. All right, anybody you want to give a shout-out to or thank or say hello to, and any final thoughts before we let you go?
No, I think I got to mention, you know, everybody that was important to me in the industry and people along the way. You know, obviously, grateful for all of them and what I've been able to accomplish.
Well, as you said at the beginning, it's been too long, but it's great to catch up with you, and it's glad to hear that that you've been able to make the most of the whole mixed martial arts scene and your time out there in Vegas. I wish I would have done more events out there and gone to more things. I went to a couple boxing matches at the Cosmopolitan, which were nice. It's one of the best new casinos in that area. But I didn't get to go to any UFC fights out there, fortunately. Someday.
No, for sure. And if you come back, give me a shout-out for sure, shoot me a text or give me a call, and we'll definitely link up. It was great to catch up to you.
Awesome. All right, well, we'll send you the link when we have it posted, and have yourself a good night, and good luck with everything. And
awesome.
Even though I'm sure you're not going to need it.
You too, bro. for sure. And let's keep seeing these Red Sox do their damage.
All right.
Some nail biters in 11, 12, 15 innings, but hey, we're getting the job done.
Yeah, hell yeah. Gotta love my Red Sox. I actually got to write for a newspaper.
Have a good night.
Back in 2004 when they won the World Series, I got to write for a newspaper up here in New Hampshire about it. And it was a real fun time. Real fun time. It's actually one guy who came up to me the day they beat the Yankees the first game in the playoffs. And I came up to him actually at Dunkin' Donuts. They told me to go down and get the story from the fans, and I talked to this guy. I asked him, what do you think about the Red Sox coming back last night and winning the game? And this guy looks at me, he's got like a blue baseball cap on, and he goes, "The Red Sox were inherently stupid to trade Babe Ruth." It's like, what? This is an exact quote. So,
but we've established that already. But
it's just the weirdest way for the curse to get reversed after that. Just had a ball writing about it. It was so much fun because I never even did sports. I used to just do local stories, and they used to see me coming into the office with a Red Sox hat on every day, so they knew I followed it. And they said, "Why don't you go write some fan reaction stories?" And that was awesome. Couldn't have picked a better time to get me into it. Anyway, that's funny you mentioned that. And one more story before we go. You'll love this one. I used to work at a cemetery in the outskirts of Boston, and one day mowing the lawns, I go over a plate in the ground, and it's a guy named Harvey Uran, and he has his birth date and his death date on the plate, and then one line, it says, "Never saw the Red Sox win the World Series. He died in 1995. I was like, wow, that's dedication. Taking it to the grave.
Yeah.
All right, Eddie.
I don't know. In Philadelphia, I think we got you back. My God, he passed away. He asked that six members of the Philadelphia Eagles lower him into the. Lower him. It was great. They can let him down one time.
Yeah, there's some diehard fans out there for sure. All right, Eddie. Well, thanks for taking the time with us, and have a good night. And you got plenty left of it out there. We're
no problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take it easy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you later, buddy. You guys have a good one.
You too.
Take care.